You dickheads.
Welcome to episode 36. This one's called Great Balls of Fire. Come on!
David, how are you, sir? You sound pretty fucking excited. Are your balls of fire?
Mate, it's season 4. It's here. It's here.
It is. We're lucky enough to be the ultimate, not even the penultimate, the ultimate, the last episode for the releases. Steamforged have done that, I don't think, by way of design being nice to us or favouring us. But Alchemists, we got to chat about a guild that I love and you're, you know, kind of so-so about.
I would say I am antipathetic towards.
Fair. That's fair.
I actually think you're responsible for this because you have beaten my head in so many times with Alchemists that there's some negative association going on. Nonetheless, Campbell, nonetheless, I'm happy to drop these fiery balls like I was a 13-year-old boy hitting puberty.
So we get to have not one, but two. We've got Jamie Squared, which is always good. You can never have too many Jamies, I think. So we get Perkins and Giblin in for a good little chat, one from a development point of view, one from a playtest point of view, and get to go through the cards. We have a little chat, talk about things. I'm sure we missed some rules. Our faithful supporters are more than welcome to point this out to us and call us dickheads. Mm. We call ourselves dickheads quite a bit, so that's, you know, doesn't really matter.
Campbell, this is great, man. I've been looking forward to season 4. I know you have. I know everybody else is super pumped about a fresh new set of rules to get behind. And, Alchemists are, as Jamie flags in the chat, they're a pretty comprehensive rework.
Yeah. And I think all the Alky fans have been looking forward to that. Smoke was a spoiler that they threw out and really teased everyone with. And I reckon most of the other models follow suit. Some change lots, some change a little. My boy Venon gets a nice rework, and the bomb is real. I love it.
That's great, man. I'm happy that you're happy, but your happiness makes me sad. So I guess we'll just have to meet in the middle somewhere and just get this done.
Absolutely. Should we wang back and see what happens?
Let's do it. All right, on the line we have the Jamie, both Perkins and Giblin. We are blessed to have you both here, gentlemen. And we are revealing the Season 4 Alchemist Guild. This has been hotly anticipated. We are deeply honoured.
Cool.
Thanks for having us.
Such an enthusiastic start to the podcast.
Well, I mean, it's not every day we get both of you in one spot. I mean, I think the last time I was fortunate like this was about 15,000 kilometres from where I'm sitting now. You can't have too much of a good thing is what I've learned.
Yeah, and there's also we need to set a ground rule that nobody's allowed to just say Jamie, as because we have that in the office over here. Like, nobody's allowed to say Jamie. It's either Perkins or Giblin, because otherwise it's just not fair on either of us, really.
Okay, well, now that we've established the ground rules, why don't we just get into this? Perkins, did you want to give us a bit of background about the why of these changes? Maybe set the scene for us?
Sure. So the Alchemists have always had something of an identity crisis since the beginning of Guild Ball. We always knew what the idea of the Alchemists were. We struggled a number of times to try to translate that onto the pitch in the game. We knew we wanted them to have unique interactions with the condition part of the game. And previously that's taken the form of having a lot of access to AoEs and drifting AoEs around the table, because AoEs, character players like Fire Blast and Noxious Blast, have traditionally been the most commonplace way to get conditions onto enemy players. So we did that with Smoke during Season 3, for instance, and Midas was doing a little bit of that as well. But it never really felt like so much of a unique, like it felt more like the AoE part of their game was the unique part of the Alchemist game rather than the conditions themselves. And we had a number of other strange things going on. We experimented quite a lot with them, and over time it's just taken us a little while to figure out what really is going to be unique for them. So we've went a little bit back to the drawing board with them. And it's certainly fair to say that the Alchemist Guild as a whole are probably the most in-depth set of changes in season four. The only other thing that comes close is perhaps the farmers in terms of like the in-depth level of change. Now, some of the things that we've done to them, people have seen a little bit of earlier in the year, and we actually said for the release of Veteran Calculus that she's a little bit of like a spoiler for how season four Alchemists look. And that is actually absolutely true in the ability for her to remove a condition from either a friendly or an enemy model and then gain a benefit for doing that. That's become one of the central mechanics of the new Alchemists. Not that they all have that ability, but there are a number of them that have abilities where they can remove conditions from either a friendly or an enemy player and gain a benefit as they spend them as a resource, basically. And that's something that no other guild in Guild Ball can do. So it means that we don't have to add a lot of extra complexity in the Alchemists. We don't have to give them their own condition like we do for, say, the rat catchers. Instead, they can focus a lot more down on burning and poison as being their thing together. But the fact that they can spend those burning and poison conditions to get extra effects is the thing that the Alchemists have that no one else does. Mm. So we focus that as being one of the key points of their playstyle, that they have this extra resource mechanic that they can dip into and spend. That also gives them a little bit extra resilience against those two conditions as well, because obviously they don't have to spend momentum to clear those as much as anybody else does. They could just remove them and gain a benefit at the same time, so they're more efficient with momentum, etc. as well. And the Alchemists certainly are the crest of the wave, I guess, of this element that we've talked about in a number of the other reveal podcasts and reviews, is that there's a lot more condition play in season four, and that's in a little bit of other guilds as well, probably more. But me, I do apologise. I've cut that bit out. There's a lot more condition play from, say, the hunters and the brewers for knockdown and snared, for instance. But the alchemists really do show that, opening of the floodgates, and just you should expect to be poisoned or have most of your players either poisoned or burning or both for the majority of the game against the alchemists, and that's whether you're playing against smoke or Midas. So, as a result of that, for playing against the alchemists, we've allowed other guilds to have a little bit more access to condition play. And what that's done overall is add some consistency to playing with conditions in Guild Ball. Because what you used to have previously is some guilds would have really good access to anti-condition tech, like Smelling Salts, for instance, and then other guilds would have nothing at all. So you have this very inconsistent ability to combat conditions from all the other different guilds. But because we've decided to pump up the amount and quantity of conditions in Guild Ball from season four onwards, we felt that we needed to have a more stabilized line across the game. So there are more conditions out there as a whole, but there is also more anti-condition tech out there as a whole to give it a more fair playing field. That'll hopefully make some sense in that giant, absolutely, massive waffle.
It
does make sense, yes. Yeah.
I was just going to say, is this some kind of like you're in cahoots with singled out to sell more of their condition dice? Is that essentially, that's what that came across as?
Those condition dice are great, but there are lots of different ways to buy condition tokens. and Andrew Jones, I would never insult him. He's a very intimidating man. Have you seen the size of that guy?
But I think in comparison to him, most people are far smaller than he expects them to be. So
yeah,
he is a mountain of a man. We do love him. We did get picked up at W2C. I was just going to ask about the guild style, and you talked about the conditions as a resource, because I love that. Looking through the cards, was that intended from the start, or was that something that happened through the various iterations of the playtesting?
So it's something that we've said on all of our reveal podcasts, it's something we've said on all of our reveal blogs. Literally, it's the same boilerplated paragraph we put in all of them. And it is probably more true for the Alchemist than anybody else, is that we, at the start of the process for developing season four, we went back and had a look at the guild's intended playstyle and what makes them unique. And the thing that we were struggling to find with the Alchemists was that element of what is it that makes them unique. And we discovered, obviously, that it was more to do with AoE placements and AoE, the AoE game, than actually the condition game itself. So we weren't happy at what their identity actually was, and we wanted to turn it back to what it should have been, which is more of a focus on conditions themselves rather than the method of transmitting those conditions, if that makes sense. So it happened quite early on. We had a lot of big discussions about what is it that's going to be this unique identity element at the absolute core of the Alchemists. It was actually Steve Margotson that came up with the idea of spending conditions as a resource. So we played around a little bit more with that, and the more we played into it, the more we really liked it as an idea, and so we ran with it, really. So.
Yeah,
so no, it was quite early on, to answer your question.
Yeah. No, fair. And in the interest of the punters, do you think we should start rolling into some of these condition-based models and, you know, start talking about where you changed them and why you changed them?
Yeah.
Why not? So should we start with the two captains, probably? Maybe let's start with Midas first. Obviously, these cards will be launched as, you know, people can read them as we're kind of going. I don't want to go through his, like, playbook completely, but he has had quite a change to character plays. The playbook's been shuffled around a bit. What was the overarching kind of thing that you saw him doing that you didn't like and things that you, you know, did want to see him doing?
So the issue with Midas is that he didn't really have much of a direct link to playing with conditions. You could take Midas out of the Alchemists previously and put him almost on the other team that was goal scoring related, and he'd more or less make sense with whatever they were doing. You could have taken season three Midas out in the Fisherman team, and he probably would have made a rough amount of sense with how they play. So we wanted to have establish that direct line, and the way in which we ended up doing that in the end was through formulation. And the formulation actually came towards the end of the cycle, and it was actually suggested by a playtester, and it was the missing link that we had a lot of the other things in place, and it was just that one missing link of how do we directly tie Midas to this almost reliance upon making use of conditions, because he already had the linear legendary, he already had the character play that was allowed to spread conditions, but he wasn't reliant upon them. And so the formulation way is actually impacting probably the most important part of Midas, which is his playbook and how he moves around the table, shuffles enemy players around, gets space for himself to go and make a shot or recover the ball. The playbook for Midas is incredibly important. Whereas, you know, for Smoke, you could probably say that she has a greater reliance upon her character plays. That's not so much the case for Midas. He gets a lot more use out of his playbook and his own personal pack pitch. So linking those two together was just like, it was just the final piece of the puzzle, really. And a lot of the other elements of him had to shift ever so slightly to make way for that. So obviously, when we put formulation in, we then had to go back and re-examine the playbook and make sure that all syncs up properly.
What you've done there in terms of what it does, almost giving extra kind of branches to the tree as to what he can, you know, achieve, basically giving him a tackle dodge on one, things like that, if the situation is set up the right way. So, no.
Yeah.
Fascinating. So the other things you've done is you've given him acrobatic, which I can assume is basically to make up for the, you know, his heroic play. So you still want that kind of dodge on him, but the ability to buy it with influence and not momentum.
Yeah, basically. He still has the ability. We just want him to pay for it with influence rather than momentum. You say so. There's not much more to it than that one, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Legendary got markedly better in terms of, I know myself and Giblin, you've probably done this as well. You set up, you declare the legendary, and then you miss the shot.
You miss the shot, and you're like, well, that's the legendary gun of the game, and I didn't even get to get the benefit of it. So this one's a much neater one, and you get to use it to set up formation, so you can guarantee that you're going to be making those push dodges.
Yeah, absolutely. Push dodges. Tackle dodge, double dodge, like you've got a whole bunch work with there. And it's also, like, if you go end of turn goal run, you just land some serious condition damage down on people too.
Yeah, 100%.
No, I love it. Any other changes there that we've kind of missed in terms of, you know, what you thought would work quite well, Perkins?
That's majority of it, really, for Midas. I mean, his core character hasn't... I mean, we've done a complete rewrite of Midas before, which was the jump from Season 2 to Season 3. I wouldn't say that this is a complete rewrite here, but he is still very much a focused goal scorer. He has momentous damage on his playbook, but it's on his fourth column, it's quite high up, so it's not something that he can do takeouts, but it's definitely not his main style of play. The fact that he's just an excellent goal scorer, it hasn't really changed from his Season 3 card, really. We've just gone about it in a different way.
Yeah, absolutely. And you just simplified the playbook as well, which is a common theme across a lot of the Season 4 stuff that you guys have talked about.
Yeah, well, we've made a concerted effort to reduce double results overall.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Midas, still love to play him. I think the legendary is awesome. But should we move on to, well, I know you guys have already spoiled this, but the other captain, Smoke, and how awesome she's become.
Yep. So if you want, do you want to, because I know you actually played more games with Smoke than you have with Midas. Do you want to take this one, Goodwin, if you're confident to do so?
Yeah, sure thing. Well, what do you want to know? She's my bae. Yeah, I love Smoke.
Yeah. Sorry, go on.
I was going to say, well, how having played quite a lot of Smoke in season three as well, how would you say that she's changed in, like, in the decisions you make with her between season three and season four, Giblin?
So, like, season two, season three, I was running Smoke and was a big fan, even though it wasn't for the opponent, of the Drift Clouds, you never touch me, but I'll kill you over time. Now the fact that she gets stuck into the middle of it all, chemical breezing her own, herself, or friendly models to suffer the conditions makes it really easy. It feels like she's actually taking part in the game rather than sat on the sidelines waiting for the end of turn. So it's a much more engaging game with your opponent.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, that seems to be a bit of a trend that, you know, across this, you know, season four, that you're bringing the models together. You know, you want more interaction. You don't want those longer kind of drawn out range games, which I love. And she definitely, you know, sits in the middle of the pack a lot more, but still retains a lot of her ability to jump around. Like with her cloud jumper, unpredictable, keeps her pretty safe. So I think the TAC 5, what do you think of that? Because, you know, TAC 4
is huge. Trash. So I need to get that ball off them. They're a death 4 armor 1. I'm probably not doing this without a charge. TAC 5 at least gives us that possibility to have the tiny little spike to hit the tackle. And also the momentous results being more accessible mean her activation can just do that little bit more.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
I was going to say, it just makes your activations with her that little bit easier to plan out rather than, like, right, if I jump into this cloud, charge there, that maybe gets me the ball, rather than you can actually just walk in and do it now.
Just for a while.
I think with Old Smoke, you were kind of, when you activated her, unless you're attacking a model that's within, like, multiple friendly melee zones for a load of gang ups, you were kind of accepting that this is an activation that isn't going to generate me any momentum, or it's actually going to be momentum negative, where you're going to end up spending more than you earn. And that's, I don't think that's necessarily the case anymore. You might actually have, you're more commonly going to go into situations where you could, if you need to, you could just go and dump six influence into just making six attacks to do momentous pushes. And that sometimes might be what you need to do.
You
probably didn't have that as much of an option before.
No, definitely not. So the changes were obviously that TAC change that we talked about, going to TAC 5. Playbook got longer but gained a knockdown. I don't mind that. I can't see you using it all the time, but it's always something handy when someone, you know, offers you a parting blow, something like that. Pretty much everything else stayed the same in terms of the stat line. The big changes were the character plays. So Chemical Breeze changes from, you know, drifting the AoEs around to enemy models within 3 inches of target friendly model, guild model, suffer the burning condition, or you can choose the poison condition. Giblin, you've played with this, I assume. What are your thoughts on the change of how that interacts?
It's brilliant. So it allows you to, like, send in a model to start off the engagement, and if they do jump onto that model, then they all get poisoned and set on fire. Or Smoke is fantastic for doing it herself. If she smoke clouds forwards, uses them on herself, sets a bunch of people on fire, and then walks away. I think you have a lot more freedom with it. And if you've got a big base like VCAT, that 3 inches spreads around even further. So it's really nice.
Yeah, no, I like that. I like how it radiates off one of your models. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And if you're going to go for the world burn where she's jumping in to generate a lot of momentum, you can, even if there are no, it's alchemists, so they're definitely going to have a lot of conditions on the board. But if you happen to be in a situation against a team that can clear a lot of conditions easily, say Essence Brewers, for instance, you can still activate smoke at the end of the turn, probably spend just one for a smoke cloud to jump in and another one for a chemical breeze on herself. And then you've immediately procced a load of enemy models that are already within range for Watch the World Burn to generate that lot of momentum. And she's got a lot of versatility with this, and she doesn't have to just rely on the other players and be from a distance. She can still do quite a lot of stuff just personally, basically.
Yeah, you know, generate the momentum and then potentially legendary as well. And just, you're talking a pretty good end of turn. Yeah, activation and potentially, you know, go again, start of the next turn.
Yeah, you boys have done well. What I've noticed is that previously playing against Smoke, I felt like something was burning and I needed a shot of penicillin. I still feel like that. But, you know, in a fresh new kind of bacterial strain.
The other thing I've found whilst in playtest with Watch the World Burn is you can really put the conditions out, but let's say if you need to heal a friendly model, you're still stuck with waiting until after the activation to get that momentum. So you still have to plan out your turn quite carefully. So I've been in situations going with smoke where I'm like, I probably can't hit anyone and generate the momentum I need because TAC 5 isn't the most reliable. But I'm going to get a turn at the end of this turn. So you just need to be careful of how quickly you go in with it.
Okay, so it becomes a bit of a that decision point as to when you want to activate her. I mean, naturally she rarely wanted to go first before. Now she wants to go late in the turn, but kind of mid turn can also be beneficial. I can see that as well. So she retains smoke bomb. I assume that's just basically a wording change as to how that's kind of been written down, and then also the range change with the changes to how AoEs work.
Yep.
And then the other one is Infuse. So target enemy model that is currently suffering the burning or poison condition suffers 3 condition damage. So basically a range play, not once per turn, so you can keep chucking it out, which is pretty awesome. I'm only disappointed we'll get to Flask, but you don't get the benefit of Flask with this one. Pretty cool, and how that relies actually or plays in quite well with the legendary and all the other things we just talked about. Like Giblin, do you see yourself using that quite a bit, or is that something because of the range nature and the dice nature of it you don't use all the time?
So because it's 2 dice and obviously you can bonus time it to 3, you use it to really finish off. It's usually like you do that and then legendary to finish off. But you don't really want to use it too much because it is too influenced to do so. And if you can wait to the end of the turn, you'll probably get that 3 damage through the conditions anyway. That's how I found it anyway. I play tested mostly against Brewers, so it was useful there because of the 3+ and tough hide. Being condition damage, breaking through that made taking them down that little bit easier.
Yeah, so you can stack that with a legendary and you're talking 6 damage. And then if you're going very last activation, then you've done another 3 to them. That's pretty handy.
So just pointing that one out, specifically for people that don't know, the condition damage is a phrase that we've had in the game since season 2 or season 3, I think. But it's something we hadn't made a huge amount of use of before. So for anybody who doesn't know, condition damage is something that is made the most use of by the alchemists. I think the only person outside the alchemists that has it is Fillet on her legendary. But condition damage basically ignores damage modifiers. So it's it will ignore things like hide. But it also can't be increased either. It's just whatever the damage is printed on the card, that's the amount of damage you're going to cause. So,
No, absolutely. And Phil's the only one that can benefit from the positive modifier there anyway.
Yeah.
So, no, very nice, very nice. Dave, do you want to jump in at this point and talk about how much you don't like this model? Or?
Well, you know how I feel like... how I feel about alchemists in general. I mean... You've all got no souls. That's fine.
Fair.
But
fair.
As an opponent of the guild, do you think that you'd be, even if you don't enjoy playing them still, but do you think you'd enjoy playing this version of the Alchemists more or less than playing them in Season 3? Because that's actually still perfectly viable.
I think as a general comment, I find what you've done with the Alchemists' innate resource economy quite interesting. And I think that minigame... that they play as a faction in maximizing efficiency through use of conditions actually draws me to them. You know, it reminds me of what you've done with Hunters a little bit in terms of their momentum economy. So I can see some parallels there.
Yeah, and it is so much fun when you're trying to set up your turn. So when Vitriol, you want to have, say, Venom nearby poisoning himself so you can set up that charge free. You do feel like you're playing your own little game alongside the actual game of Guild Ball.
Yeah, it's cool. I like the more complicated guild. So
one of the things that we specifically tried to do the Alchemists is to increase their to decrease the amount of tools they've got to be able to sit on the opposite side of the pitch and throw bombs at you, basically from the other side, and play a non-engagement game. So they've got less tools with which to do that now, and it's less beneficial for them to do that because they don't have things like Menace and Liberation. And they've also got an increased desire to actually want to engage you at close range because of things like how Chemical Breeze works. It's got to target a model that's within 3 inches of your team. So by definition, you have to be close. And for things like Watch the World Burn, they have to, by definition, be close to your team to benefit from it. So the fact that they're going to be playing further away from you less, and they're actually, therefore, they're going to be playing very close to you a lot more, does that make them a more interesting prospect for you to play against?
Well, I mean, I always like to punch things in the head, so yes.
Sad.
Yeah. So, was there any particular motivation to move the alchemists away from a non-interactive playstyle? I mean, can you point to any particular event or individual that?
No, I mean, I could. I'm not going to. Basically, it's not very fun to play against, regardless of who was doing it. And at the end of the day, we want to play. Anybody playing a game, whether that's Guild Ball or anything else, you want to play a game to be able to interact with everything that's going on. And one of the key parts of Guild Ball is engaging with your enemy team, using one of the most unique parts of Guild Ball is the playbook design and therefore the melee combat system that we have, and also playing around with the ball. And a lot of that stuff requires you to engage with the opposing team and to do fun, interesting things. Therefore, a non-interactive playstyle is the opposite of that. Literally, if you're playing a non-interactive playstyle and you are playing that team that wants to sit away, technically you're the only person playing the game because you're the only person that's getting to interact with your opponent and they're not. So they're having less fun than you. So it's something that we wanted to minimize. There's a reason for it to be to be necessary, but we just wanted to reduce the amount that it's being used because it's just being used far too often, and we want to have more people have more fun. Really, that's what it boils down to.
As a person who likes to solitaire my games of Guild Ball, I'm feeling a little triggered right now. But I understand. Shall we move on?
Shall we? Indeed. So should we get on to Flask? Because I love me some robot action. Big change here. A couple of big changes. Number one was Intensify, gone from the game forever.
For now.
Where's on the fence, Bergens?
Spicy.
Nice. I did used to love me some like triple wrap intensifiers, but anyway. So smoke bombs become a character play, so he doesn't get this free little smoke cloud. I'd say that is probably fair. The other big one from Little Robot is the Beaker Keeper. So basically being able to give a non-captain guild model within four a free character play with cost one or two. Not bad.
So good.
Yep. Such a great trait name. Like, what an amazing trait name.
Yeah. It fits perfectly for him, doesn't it?
I've made my family refer to me as the Beaker Keeper all week. I won't ask.
Just a side point about some of how his abilities interact. Beaker Keeper, you can actually use that on himself. So if you do still really want that free smoke bomb, or you've just saved Flask until the end of the turn or for something, then you can still, I mean, end of the turn is probably not very useful, but you can still Beekeeper himself to get the free smoke bomb, basically. We'll probably more likely use it on another player, and it's just an extra little bit of efficiency for them. One of the things that we have noticed in general about Guild Ball is there's definitely been, as the newer models have come out, there's probably been an increase in the amount of free stuff people have got. Especially if you look at teams like the Blacksmiths and the Farmers that have Harvest Markers, and then the Blacksmiths have quite a lot of stand near a friendly master model and you get a free character play. There's been an increased amount of free stuff that models get. So one of the things that we did in general with Season 4, and it's probably more prominent in the Alchemist than anybody else because of how their condition mechanics now work, that we just needed to increase the amount of free stuff that the older teams had access to equalize that out. And Beekeeper is one of the smaller ways in which we did that.
Yeah, no, it's nice. Giblin, thoughts on uses in gameplay?
Oh, it's first activation is a good one for him. Throw out the smoke bomb for smoke if you're playing her, or set up an area of the pitch do you want to go have someone stand at the end, or if you've kicked off, a good choice. And just being able to give someone that free cost one or two is value, isn't it?
Yeah.
You have to throw out one of the AoEs for free if you want. It's just great because you don't need to put any influence on them, or you just one for the sprint. It frees up your turn so much.
Do you find you can use it like a responsive, like you're responding to the opponent, so you can hold off and then sometimes, yeah, like you said, you spread the influence a bit thin and then you throw it on one player just to get, I mean, you can throw it on, you know, Crucible for an acrobatic or whatever, and we'll get into those models.
All right, or Vitriol for clone, and there's so many options that do. So you can either start it off if you've got a turn one by rote sort of thing, or be reactive later in the game with it. So yeah, it great Great character trait, Perkins. Well done.
Mm. Well played. Well played. You guys can high five each other. Are you even in the same room over there?
No.
No. No, we're in opposite parts of the office so we don't get an echo.
Right.
Okay. Right. Nice. Collegial. Is there something going on there that we need to know about, or the community?
No.
I have a downstairs office. He has an upstairs office. It's a cultural divide.
It was always
those guys upstairs. The fancy office.
Actually, on a quick side note, we did have one of our locals to rock up at HQ a month or so ago.
Yes, I believe so.
Yep.
Yeah, and Kiblin, you went and said hi, Perkins. I don't believe you did. I'm not sure if you're there, but I'm still in an excuse.
Pretty sure I wasn't in the office that day, but sure. That was definitely just me being a douche.
That's exactly what he said to us.
Yeah. So shout out to Pat. He's a legend. Did you play a game with him, Giblin?
No, unfortunately not. As much as I'm a role as community manager, unfortunately I can't swing a game of Guild Ball as part of my work at most times anyway.
Yeah, that's fair. Just podcast.
Yeah, podcast.
Nice one. So let's move on to the other mascot, Naha. Bit of fun here. Thoughts overall on, you know, the changes? I mean, there aren't a huge amount of changes with Naja. Was she in a good spot, and you didn't want to change too much?
So one of the things that changes here, but... Say again?
Sorry, go on.
Yeah. So one of the things that we were conscious of with the Alchemist mascots is that we wanted to make sure that we had a balance of pick rate, because one of the things that we saw over the history of the Alchemist is that in periods of time, people would just default to Naja as the automatic pick, which was generally before remember when we had the old guild plots and you had Sikkim? That was obviously very, very good on Flask because you could get the free charge and get lots of intensify wraps. But before Sikkim was coming in, we were starting to see Naja being the automatic pick. And we haven't seen in the history of the Alchemist a stabilized point where people could take either mascot for different reasons. So we spent quite a lot of time analyzing the two in comparison to each other to make sure that you had different reasons for taking either one. So the big keeper on Flask is obviously incredibly powerful and very, very useful as well. So we needed to make sure that we had an equal but opposite reason for wanting to take Naja. So one of the things we did, that was, that's obviously why Naja got one of the spend condition to get something for free traits. That's test subjects for Naja, so she gets to either have a free character, player, and attack. And then just having a 2-inch mana zone unpredictable movement model could be very, very handy sometimes for holding the ball or just sending into a scrum to get some extra crowd outs, but be relatively safe because the unpredictable movement just gives you a lot of very different uses to what Flask does, and hopefully will give people different uses to use both, but hopefully a relatively equal amount.
So. Did you think that you needed the test subject to kind of balance out against Beaker Keeper? Was it playtested without that?
Test subject was one of the things that came in toward the end of Naja's playtest. She didn't have, the snake didn't have it early on. It's something that came in as we found that we needed it. So we were finding that Flask was being taken more often because of the Beaker Keeper. So we needed to make sure that Naja had something else. I mean, but generally, it's a general rule. The better mascots in the game are the ones that give you something for free or give you extra influence efficiency through something like Bag of Coffers. So the test subject needed to be something that we therefore put onto.
Absolutely. Sorry, the one other thing I did actually miss, obviously retaining Venomous Strike's fantastic, but the damage turned into momentum.
Momentum Swan makes a difference. Like, you can happily put one on Naja, go in, movement 6, 2-inch melee is decent for just free advance. Do that one momentous damage, get a point momentum, they're poisoned, spend that to Hypnosis onto somebody from test subject. Gives you quite an efficient activation. You get one momentum, and then they're going to be influence negative.
And you can
hit the Hypnosis.
And you can then test subject to poison off that model and hit him again and poison him again. Yeah. So for one, that's pretty handy. You've basically done three things kind of thing.
I was going to say Hypnosis is still cash money. Like, that's a great play.
Definitely. Yeah,
so I don't know, you it's part of this trend of I think what you guys have been doing to make mascots less of a sub piece and an actual, being an actual contributor to the game state. This all fits with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you basically, the situation you outlined there, you almost always put one on Naja, don't you? I mean, given what you achieve with that.
as soon as the scrum happens and you've got your like extra melee zones in there to increase that attack three, hitting that one damage is pretty reliable. Momentum, spend that poison, attack again, another momentum, and poison's back on, ready for someone else to utilize. It's a solid activation from Naja.
Mm-hmm. And even in the situation where you're in an alchemist dreamland where all of the conditions are already out, you actually in that situation don't have to allocate anything to Naja if you don't want to, and you can still you can still just go in with no influence and just go, oh, here's a poisoned model, I just want a point of momentum, so I'm going to take the poison off you, with use that with test subject to make an attack, poison, put the poison back on you because my momentum's one damage, and I've just profited by just generating a momentum point out of nowhere and put a point of damage on you as well. So there's a lot of versatility and just and efficiency really, and just whatever you want to do.
Sneaky.
Mm-hmm. You make me sick.
I was waiting for when that was going to start. I love it. I love it. Fair. So, Naja, I think awesome. I think you've done well. Well, obviously, in terms of balancing the mascots, because, I've sat there and tried to work out different, and this is a side note, actually, like with the guild on the whole, you've really achieved that goal of making it really difficult to choose a 6 or even an 8, like from, whatever 12 models that you have access to. I find that's really good, but also challenging at the same time.
That's really good to hear. It's certainly one of the aims of season 4 overall was to really focus down on the because I think that we've got to a point now where the overall balance of the guilds matched against each other is generally quite a reasonable place. Even whenever people make their tier lists of however they choose to rank the guilds, people will often caveat that by saying, but even the guilds that are in the however would people put them at the lower bracket, which say if you're good enough, you can still beat the guilds that people rank in inverted commas higher. So we know that overall we're in a relatively happy state with the power of guilds against each other. So we made sure this time to put an extra focus on the internal balance or the player selection rates within a guild and to give those a good straighten out. So it's great to hear that back, basically, that seems to have been achieved.
No, absolutely. Well, definitely with these guys. I haven't obviously delved through all of them, but definitely the ones I looked at. So moving on to calculus then, I think we'll just go alphabetical. So normal calculus, she looks pretty tidy. You've increased the attack a little bit and influenced the playbook from there. Kept the nice little character plays, which we all know and love. The range has obviously changed with the Noxious Blast. The blind's also been reduced. Was that obviously it's a thing across the board, but you just thought that was a bit too powerful at the range?
It's not so much powerful as I mentioned earlier on, that one of the big aims is to reduce this playstyle of non-interactivity, and blind was something that was contributing to that a little bit, because blind at range 8 is something that's long enough range for you to move up, use blind on a model, stay exactly where you are, and then because of the reduced movement range on the model you've hit with blind, they can no longer get to you. So in that way it's contributing towards this gameplay style of non-interactivity. So lowering the range of blind was more to do with that than a pure power level thing. One of the other things that I really want to, now that we're on calculus, we want to point out as well regarding ranged character players is in giving the alchemists not only less tools to work well from a distance by removing things like momentous inspiration, but giving them more reason to want to play at close range. So that's why Noxious Blast and Fire Blast, as people will have seen on the other cards by the time this podcast goes out, is playbook triggers. So both Mercury and Calculus have got momentous playbook triggers for their character players, notably Noxious Blast and Fire Blast, as I said. And that's to give them a reason to want to go in and use those character players in melee, not only because they will generate momentum as a replacement of momentous inspiration that they had, but also because when you actually trigger an AoE character play in melee, it means that wherever you put the AoE, all of those models will be automatically hit, which can be incredibly good against teams that have a lot of high defense models.
No, it's fantastic. I was going to move on to that, but I mean Mercury in terms of he's got the fire blast, but he also gains it with the fireball, so he can do the old, punch 4 times, hit 4 targets kind of thing if they are spread out and all within at least that range.
Yeah.
So
we nicknamed him Pyromancer Mercury because that's how he kind of looks like on his model. So we thought we'd experiment with actually seeing what happens if we give him Pyromancer style abilities where he actually wants to get to the melee to be able to do ranged damage, but from a melee position.
Yeah, no, absolutely love it. The other big change is obviously we talked about the tack change. And I've noticed this on a few of the alchemists. You've given them, you know, momentous results on the one. It was one of the things I noticed for a while that, you know, some guilds or some, you know, Fish, for example, it's almost a binary proposition. Do I hit the one column or do I not? With alchemists, you hit the one column and you go, oh, crap, no momentum. Whereas one you've damage, kind of please. Yeah, one yeah. damage, exactly. Whereas you've started to introduce that, which I'm a big fan of. And so she's gained the momentous, you know, dodge on the one, which I think is pretty cool. The other one is the momentous damage. You started to put that more into them. So instead of being so starved, obviously we've got these ranged character plays, but Calculus and Mercury. Oh no, Mercury didn't, did he? Calculus.
No, but he's got Fireball.
He's got the Fireball. Crucible is the other one I was thinking of. Having that momentous damage on the three, pretty cool with a couple of crowds. So I think you can, you know, consistently hit that mark as well, which really, like you said, Perkins, draws them into that scrum more and more.
Yeah, so it gives them a reason to want to engage. And it also, even though the Alchemists are, I think it's still fair to say that they are overall better team at scoring goals than performing takeouts. One of the things that we've talked about a lot in the past, but I don't think we've quite nailed it properly, and I'm hoping that we really have this year, and it looks so far that we have, is that we really want to double down on this idea that because conditions are going to be all over the place, like they... through things like Smoke that we've already looked at, Midas, and we'll get into other models that just spread conditions so easily in other places as well, that tick down of health is going to happen a lot more often. So even though the Alchemists only have a very limited access to momentous damage, it should be enough to help them get a takeout here and there, because they're very rarely going to be going into attack a model that has full health. It will have already lost, you know, somewhere between 1 and 6 health already because of the condition damage it's already suffered. So that they can go and they can do a lot of finishing off. And I don't know if I think you've seen a little bit of that from playing games already, Giblin.
Yes, yeah, definitely. Even against the Brewers with tough hides, it's still possible to do with the condition damage. So,
Out of interest, do you basically try to use that with Calculus when you've used her? You've tried to trigger that the Noxious Blast off the playbook, or how have you kind of rolled her out?
Yeah, so for me, it was so the six I ran for playtest for various times, but the one I kind of settled on was Smoke, Nausea, Venin, Crucible, Calculus, and Vitriol, because I wanted to test whether you could play without the Catalysts. In Seasons 3, you took one or the other, and they were pretty much a staple of your team for getting those takeouts. And I found it very possible to still take out with the sort of the small base miniatures. And yeah, being able to go in and hit that Noxious Blast to go and throw it over somewhere else to guarantee hitting that high defense model or, you know, that slightly more resilient model was so useful. And as I mentioned, getting that dodge on one to hit the momentum is tasty.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're always putting, you know, at least one. I mean, obviously, you know, the whole blind tech is, you know, still pretty valid. So,
yeah.
Very nice.
But using that Noxious Blast to throw it over into a different area of the pitch from where you are allows someone else to take the benefit of that condition that's over there suddenly. So you really want your sort of team to be throwing themselves in, hitting the character plays triggered by the playbook, so it guarantees it's more dice reliable. So yeah, it's all good.
Yeah, no, very nice, very nice. So moving on to her veteran formation character. So we've all known about this one for a while. I'll quickly jump back. She's actually got reactive solution, doesn't she? Normal Calculus.
Yes, yeah. So,
basically once per turn can basically remove a condition within 4 and gets a free character play. Is that right?
Yep.
So, you know, another handy model that you can put one or none on and still basically get the value that you're looking for, or you walk up with one punch, throw out the poison, strip the poison off, you know.
Blind someone.
Brilliant. I love it. There's a lot of efficiency there.
There's a lot of efficiency and there's a lot of unpredictability in the guild because you don't know what they can do with their turn. Like the breadth of options is there for you.
So you're finding the turns a bit more organic then in terms of you let it roll out and you see what kind of happens. You play a bit more reactive.
Yes,
I mean, definitely. Obviously you go in with a plan, but
you know, oh, I might poison my own model and take the damage, but then I can use that. I can remove that immediately to get a benefit, and I don't need to take the condition off an enemy model. If, let's say, you throw that AoE over calculus to someone else, I'm pretty sure I got my wording right on that one. It's just target model, isn't it?
Yep, that's true. That's true. All those abilities models can target either friendly or enemy models. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So you can hit yourself for 2 damage and then use a character play for free. There's just a lot of possibility in the turns and the activations.
Yeah, I mean, you'd argue that you potentially do when you throw that. You know, if you want to get the blind off, you throw the AoE, you tag one of your own models just in case you miss the roll on one of theirs.
The only stipulation to that, she couldn't target models. They can't target themselves with the when you're removing conditions. Yeah. It has to be another model. So yeah. It can be a friendly or an enemy, but it can't be themselves. They have to, again. It's an element of interaction. It's not something they can do in a vacuum.
Nice. But the efficiency there, and obviously that surprise element that you're talking about, is pretty cool. Very nice. Moving back to the veteran version, which we've all seen and we know and love, probably don't need to go through that much other than to talk about how, extraction, it was the first kind of spoiler for the ability to use a condition. So was her playtesting done outside of the other ones? Like, is this where some of that idea came from, or...?
So it was Veteran Calculus was playtested alongside the Season 4 stuff. It's just that Veteran Calculus's Season 3 deadline was earlier, obviously, than the lock for Season 4. So there are differences between Season 3 Calculus and Season 4 Calculus, but that's because we hadn't completed doing the playtesting of all of the rest of the alchemists around her. So for example, a notable change on Veteran Calculus is actually on Extraction, is that the original version of Extraction Season 3 could remove any condition, whereas we changed all of the abilities, changed Extraction as well as all of the abilities to remove conditions to specifically only target burning and poison, and that's mainly because it gave them way too much power against teams that relied upon knockdown, such as the blacksmiths and the brewers.
Anti-knockdown tech was pretty strong with her.
Yeah, it was incredible, especially when you've got that across a whole team. It just gave them an incredible amount of power, and the knockdown condition specifically is one of the conditions that we want to maintain the power level of more so than the rest of them, because it's the most commonly seen condition in the game, and it is one of the most basic fundamentals of playing with Guild Ball, really. And it's a very simple way that a lot of teams generate extra damage by lowering the defense of enemy models and preventing them from making counterattacks, etc. So knockdown is one that we have to treat very carefully. The only other change that we made to Veteran Calculus is that Sticky Bomb actually puts the poison condition on models that hit as well, just because we wanted to give her an additional way of inflicting the poison condition so that she could trigger Extraction more easily.
Sorry, I did miss that. And once again, got the range treatment based on that.
It
is an AoE. So you've even changed the way you word the AoE. It's no longer like sitting at the top. You don't have that zone column on your character players anymore. You basically have it as part of the wording.
Yeah.
That was just part of the cleaning up. Someone had stuffed up into dust it all on.
We just noticed this is one we haven't spoken about for quite a while, actually. It's one we talked about in the earliest Season 4 reveals, but it's fine to go again. But basically, it's when we went back and had a look at how easy to understand and read player cards are, that we noticed the zone column specifically was one that they had there, but it wasn't actually being used very much. A lot less than 50% of the character plays in the game even had anything in the zone column, which would have been a pulse, an aura, or an AoE. And that just when you're being used on so few character plays, you could just take that column away, save a lot of space overall, and then just fold that information into the description of the character play, basically. And we'd already saved a lot there anyway, because we've simplified the wordings for as many character plays as possible to take up less text space and to just do more or less exactly what they say in very clear written English. So they're totally simple to read. They just do what they say now. They take up less space on the card, and removing the zone column was just a nice extra part of that, where we could just clean some space. It's weird, really, because on these, when you think about it, when you look at a player card, part of you wants it to be full of text and do lots of extra interesting abilities, but there's a bar. Because for newer players or players learning the game, it's important to have clear space so that you actually don't have a card chock full of walls of text that you've got to memorize all of. There's only a certain amount that you need to know to play this card properly. And achieving that balancing act between fun and interesting players that have a lot of interesting and unique abilities and do cool things versus being able to have player accessibility to the game, learn the game, and not have huge amounts of knowledge dump that you've got to learn to get into the game in the first place is very important. Hopefully that makes some sense.
Oh, I agree. I think everybody can enjoy that.
Completely. Shall we move on?
Yeah, let's go to Crucible.
Crucible. Yeah. Now, this is one I think Gillen's definitely excited to talk about.
Yeah.
Needed a bit of a rework. Well, not needed. I'm assuming from you, your guys' point of view, probably didn't see much play time or enough. Is that?
Yeah, that's definitely fair to say. I remember when Crucible was released and putting her on the table and trying to get the most out of her, and did pale in comparison to the other options in Guild. Whereas now with the Season 4 rework, she definitely competes to be in your 6 and definitely probably makes it into your 12.
Yeah, I would say I don't see how she doesn't fit in the 12, definitely, and even the 6, given some of the abilities and whatnot. So she's retained the dodge on momentous dodge on 1, the tackle, but some of the big changes are the character players have changed considerably. So slip past I always found quite challenging to use. Did you guys think just simplifying to acrobatic was the best play there? I love it.
So yeah, we had an experiment with different ways in which we could, because we were starting to find that we were using acrobatics and where they're going on a lot of different models, and we just wanted to, I think it's back in when we designed Crucible, would have been what season, I can't remember what it was when she came out, season 2, I think, that we were experimenting with different ways of showing abilities to jump through melee zones or to jump through scrums, basically, for footballs to get past the other side. And slip past was one of the ways in which we tried to do that. And it was an experiment that didn't quite go very well, basically. So we took it out of the game. There's a similar type ability on Veteran Hearn where he can leap into places, and we find that's a bit more fitting for the type of character that he has. But for Crucible, it didn't seem terribly fitting to do that type of ability. So we just replaced it with a much simpler acrobatics, basically, yeah.
Nice. It's probably simpler for newer players once again. Gets to that, it's just a straightforward play. The other one strikes me as your love of 1980s, 90s Tom Cruise movies. Is that fair to say?
Sure. Yeah.
Like you were just looking to shoehorn that onto some card in some guild, and this is basically how we ended up with Great Balls of Fire.
I mean, basically, this one can definitely be blamed on Bryce, but it was one. Basically, if when people come in with ability names, if it makes sense,
hang on,
and gets at least,
does he know?
And gets at least,
has he seen a doctor?
I mean, I hope so. So as long as an ability name makes sense and gets at least one laugh in the room, generally it'll go onto a card. It's a really stringent process we go through to get ability names.
Well, it's a winner. It's a winner, and I love this in terms of looking at more ball retrieval, so to speak. So target enemy model loses possession of the ball to this model, and suffers the burning condition. I love it that it's not only you lose the ball, but it's also you're on fire now. Good luck.
Yeah.
Was that?
It's like an Indiana Jones type movement. You can't just take something away. You've got to replace it with something else.
Nice. Throwing another movie in there. I love it. Brilliant. Was this, in all seriousness, not reaction is probably the wrong word, but a need for the guild to have a way of getting around ball killing?
So, yes, in short. Seems that we want to have a strong capacity to play a 3-0 playstyle, which means they should be capable of winning the game by scoring 3 goals and not getting any takeouts. That this kind of tech is close to required for those kinds of teams. So if you analyze the different teams that are probably the most capable of it, even in season 3, the Fishermen, the Navigators, you've seen already, because they both have the same access to that tech piece that performs that role, which is Siren. The Engineers have started to have similar levels of tech piece like that in terms of like Tetherball. They had that in season 3. And it's the same now for the Alchemists. We're finding it to be a necessary piece of tech, or a necessary ability for those kind of teams to have, so that they can facilitate a 3-goal play style. So we just found this was an appropriate place to put it, basically.
Nice, yeah. And I think that's partly why she's just an auto include in your 12, right? Like, you, I think you need that if you see the side that you're coming up against is basically going to play that ball killing, you know, murder ball style of game. So,
best as well is her increased kick stat up to 8 inches. Just helps you pass that ball around once you've got it back.
Pass it. I just slam it in the goal. I wouldn't even bother.
Well, yeah. if you're that far up, then yeah. Yeah. But the 8 inches helps that out a little bit as well.
You can steal the ball and pass it up the field for those really, really reliable 4-die snapshots.
Mm. Yep.
Sorry, that's...
Oh, burn. I'm sad. I'm just a little bit sad now.
Roll better.
Sorry.
You know that's an 89% chance, right?
Is it
clear on that?
I'm sure it's close to that. Sorry, you were, the WTC first round was unfortunately hinged on Cam hitting a 4-die tap-in snapshot from Colossus, and unfortunately rolled 1-2-2-3, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Either get it or you don't. That would have won them the first round, and unfortunately they didn't, and they lost.
No, I did have multiple people point out other like paths to victory as well, not long after that, including killing. Not,
I mean, that's the best thing you can hope for when you've lost the game is people like, well, you had so many ways to win.
Yeah.
Why did you choose the bad one?
Yeah, exactly. Why did you choose to roll dice? Even high percentage dice occasionally. No, fair. I don't have much of a comeback for that other than to like divert to reactive solution.
Yep.
So basically, he gets a free character play. Nice.
Yeah, so it's
yeah, go for it. Seconds. No, you.
Okay. So reactive solution is one of the reasons why Crucible has a non-standard influence stat, which she's got 2-3, and that's because if you actually stack together reactive solution with Beekeeper, she's capable of making what like a 6 influence activation, I guess, with acrobatics and Great Balls of Fire because of the strength of her character plays. You've got so much versatility there, so we just had to give that a bit of a stronger cap. It gives her a heck of a lot of versatility and efficiency as well, because even just on her own without Beekeeper, she's capable of generating, I guess, 4 influences worth of actions every turn, because she generates the 2 on her card, and then she can have the 2 extra for free from reactive solution if she uses Great Balls of Fire. So it's just, you know, incredible amount of output potential from her, and very, very, as we know as well, so incredibly important to playing an aggressive goal style, a goal scoring style as well.
Yeah, no, I love it. Absolutely love it. And based on, you know, Giblin's playtesting, there's fire and poison everywhere. So, you know, it's real.
And she's chemical admixture for those times that you do go in, hit that 2 momentous damage, you're like, well, have the burning and the poison condition.
I do love that. That you don't have to, like, previously she had to, like, give it to herself at the start of her activation, correct?
Yeah,
I didn't play her enough to actually know. And then... punching people and spreading it around. Love it.
I'll say, Perkins, did she go up to a 2 HP melee as well?
She went from a 1 to a 2 as well. So she got that really big sensor, I think, a type weapon, or like something like a ball and chain type weapon. It was appropriate for her to have a 2 HP melee zone with the model, and it also makes a lot of sense with the playstyle as well. Because she's definitely one of the more glass cannon or chandelier style models on the team. That it's perfectly fine for sort of like a really good aggressive playbook. But if you actually manage to pin her down and get hold of her, she'll probably get taken out quite easily if you misplay her.
Yeah, 4-0. That's still, you know, you knock her down, she's in world of pain. So, but I do think the 2 HP melee is massive. So nice, love it. So moving on to our good mate, Mr. Catalyst. Not a lot of changes here. He was in a pretty good kind of position. There's a few bits and pieces, like in terms of health and whatnot. Seismic kick got removed because no one ever used it, like, ever. Is that correct?
It's also a confusing play, in my opinion, as well. There's lots going on in that one character play. But Perkins, go ahead.
No, you nailed it. It wasn't being used very often, and it was very, very complicated. It took up a heck of a lot of space. It's just text space on the card. And it was unclear kind of when you'd want to use it. Do I use this for a pass? Do I use this just to kick to space? Like, the tactical reasons for using it were a bit vague. It was mainly put on there as something that we found kind of amusing and different, but it's just something that never really got used, so we took it away. The changes to his card, we gave him extra kick die as well, because we're just trying to reinforce that even though the Alchemists are capable of inflicting takeouts, they still want to focus more and playing with the ball, so he has got a nice handy three die kick now, which is just pretty rare for a 44mm base model, for a big guy. And then most of the rest of the stuff was just rephrasing things. So we rephrased Burning Effigy, for instance, so that it just I think it's phrased along similar lines to how Lightfooted works. So it's some of the things we did in the wording path for the game is we tried to streamline the structure of certain rules language. So it says there that you're ignoring the ignore the move penalty for suffering the burning condition, and you've got a similar phrasing for Lightfooted, right? So like you ignore the movement penalty for moving through rough ground. So the idea being for newer players that you can understand how that works because they've got a very similar sentence structure, which is incredibly interesting to talk about, obviously. but it is relevant and important. Not a lot of other changes on Catalyst overall, just because he still serves a very straightforward function for the team, which is he's not incredibly resilient as a tank, but he's definitely one of the most resilient players on the team, if not the most resilient player on the team. And he has really, really easy access to momentous knockdown, which is very rare for the Alchemists. They intentionally have quite restricted access to knockdown condition because they do so much burning and poison. They've got to have a weakness somewhere in the condition game, but through normal Catalyst, they can have a very consistent access to the knockdown condition, which is important for them.
No, absolutely. Another thing of note is you've reordered the character traits to put them in alphabetical order. Is that something that just didn't work with your coding, Perkins? Or?
Basically, yeah. It's annoying that there's a couple of characters that we actually forgot to do that on, but the vast majority of both character plays and character traits now are ordered alphabetically on cards, with the notable exception of Pin Vice, because Control-Delete just amuses me a lot more than it should.
Yeah, no, that's fair, and we'll stick with that one. But we'll throw it out there if people can just message us in via our Twitter as to what cards don't have them alphabetically. We'll make sure that we we'll throw them out, some kind of, you know, prize or something. I don't know. Throw a new double dodge dice at them. Who knows? Could be anything.
That's very mean.
It is. Well, just think of it as a really cheap way of doing some editing, mate. That's all. You know, just doing some. Yeah.
True. In which case, thank you.
Yeah, it's not a Steamforged, so you've got away with it there. So. Do you know how expensive it is to send, even dice or stubby holders overseas? It's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, no, we know.
well aware.
Yeah, that was a stupid question. Right, moving on. The veteran version, the man we know and love, unfortunately took a little bit of a pounding with the extra VPs. But that's fine. Vet Catalyst, do you want to go through, you know, what you saw him doing and what you saw you wanted him doing here, Perkins?
So this is definitely one of the more in-depth changes for a model.
Yeah.
And one of the things that, Veteran Catalyst, I related quite a lot to this similar playstyle to Cena, in that both of them were furious models in Season 3. And both of them were all about getting a furious charge to work, and it seemed to be giving these models a binary state that they, when you got the furious charge off, they would do so much damage and have so much of an impact on the pitch that the game kind of became focused so much on those models that it was about the opposing team for the Alchemist trying to prevent Veteran Catalyst from getting that furious charge, and it was all about Veteran Catalyst getting that furious charge and getting the most value out of it that they possibly could for the Alchemist team. And that's just not the focus that we wanted to give. We wanted to have this way more interesting, like there's so many more interesting aspects to the Alchemist team than just whether Veteran Catalyst gets a furious charge off, that we didn't want that to be focused.
Sorry.
And why is that? No, go for it.
I dislike Alchemists. I think it's just a philosophical position.
It's a philosophical. Fair enough. Yeah. In which case, we'll philosophically agree to disagree.
Yep.
But
you're making me bi-furious, Perkins.
Sure. Yeah, I am. Anyway, so I forgot what I was even getting up to now. But when Veteran Catalyst actually gets like stuck in a scrum, that he, and the same to Cedar as well, that they can, if they need to, they can just buy attacks and still have a lot of impact on the pitch. Or in Veteran Catalyst's case, he can just purchase a ground pound and just go, you know what, I don't want to be part of this mess, and just throw everyone away and just walk away from it and then reset up next turn. What you can often find with Veteran Catalyst as well is when the entire enemy team is suffering from the burning condition, he has such a high jog stat of 6 and a 2-inch melee zone, he can actually quite happily sit 8 inches away from a number of enemy models and go, a lot of you guys are suffering damage just ticking over the turn, and you can't get to me so easily because you're having to clear that condition to get over here. So I'm just going to sit at this nice distance if I need to and just choose my time to walk in. And hopefully that won't be too long because of wanting to prevent that in an interactive style. But it means that he doesn't have to have that furious anymore, is what I'm trying to get at. He can just choose his moment to just walk in and start wailing away at people and still do a horrific amount of damage, but just without having that really binary playstyle that you're having to stick to. It just gives you so much more options for getting used to having. Did you actually get many games with veteran catalyst at all, Gibdon? I can't remember if you did or not.
I think it was just the one. But the thing I remember liking from it is the removal of the 4 damage at the start or end of his activation. Just always a rule that I would hate to forget because my opponent would not benefit from it and I would just benefit for forgetting a rule.
Yeah, that's fair. Certainly when we're putting rules onto cards, we try to have them in such a way that, I mean, obviously it's hopeful that people don't forget the rules. That's just, you know, the thing we hope for anyway. But if people are going to forget their rules, then it should be a detriment to them, not a detriment to their opponent. So when people were forgetting deteriorating, it was actually a detriment to the opponent of the Alchemist rather than the Alchemist player themselves. That was just trying to demonstrate that Veteran Catalyst is actually a lot easier to take out than his former counterpart, his original counterpart. So he has a similar amount of health boxes, but he's got that much lower defense of 2. It makes such a massive difference going from 3 to 2. And instead of him having a really high number of boxes where you're having to remember taking the deterioration damage every turn, he just has a low number of boxes. So, you know, even though he has 22 is quite a high number, that constant defense 2 and on 1 stat with no tough hide, no other extra defense ability to help him out, mean that he's actually quite paper thin.
And the change from season 3 to 4, taking away his missile nature of going in and then disappearing, it really just reinforces that alchemists are going to be fighting you in the middle of the pitch rather than from their deployment line.
Absolutely. I mean, it was actually the old version of Witness Me was actually reinforcing that non-interactive playstyle because when Veteran Catalyst finally took his charge and finally engaged with the team, he would go in, do a boatload of damage, take out an enemy model, and then remove himself from the pitch as well. So the opponent still doesn't have anything to interact with. And they don't, even though they got victory points for it, they didn't get to actually have the satisfaction of making attacks, getting to take them out themselves, and getting to deal damage and getting to earn momentum from him as well. Pretty massive, especially when you're playing against a team that is inflicting conditions on you at such a high volume, making you spend momentum, not being able to generate momentum from the one model that actually chose to interact with you. Not fun, and actually massively problematic anyway, also for playing against them. So that's why that is why we made the changes to Witness Me mainly to start off with, and then as you noted, we've also taking away the extra victory points as well for it, because it was just adding to that binary state of this game is all about whether Veteran Catalyst gets this or not, and we didn't want that to be the case. So Witness Me is still on his card. It just generates extra momentum points for the team now rather than extra victory points, so that Veteran Catalyst coming in and getting a takeout is still a very high value takeout for the team. It's just not something that is all or nothing for them, basically.
Absolutely. So one of the other things was obviously the Chemical Frenzy. You've basically substituted that in a way for the Burst of Fumes. You're basically wanting to add some kind of extra damage in there, but didn't like the way Chemical Frenzy worked, or you just preferred the way Burst of Fumes, like, coupled with an intensifier style of play?
Yeah, it's kind of like the old Burst of what was called now Chemical Frenzy. It's kind of like Chemical Frenzy mixed with the old Intensify, because it affects every model suffering conditions around Catalyst. It does the extra job of adding to his damage, and because it's condition damage, it ignores tough hide, so it will always be added to a model. It kind of just adds an extra point of damage to each of his attacks because he's inflicting. Because he's got Venomous Strike and he's inflicting poison condition every time he attacks somebody, you will always benefit from Burst of Fumes as long as you damage somebody. So it's always adding to his damage and kind of doing the similar job to what Chemical Frenzy was before. And also, any time that you can combine 2 abilities down into 1 to compress that and save some card space and do all the things I talked about having less walls of text on a model, that's always a good thing. It means that this guild is, and the Alchemists are definitely going to be always going to be one of our more complicated guilds, but anything we can do to make them more accessible to everybody is always going to be a positive thing whilst retaining flavor, and I think that Chemical Burst has allowed us to do that. Burst of Fume, sorry.
Yeah, and it freed up space to put Ground Pound on the front, which coupled with Venomous Strike seems pretty fun.
Yeah, so if you walk in and actually if you walk into somebody that's been already been knocked down, or you've got some crowd ops and you actually just manage to roll the Ground Pound off your playbook, then you're doing two damage to them. You're knocking them down. You're also doing Venomous Strike because you've damaged them, so they're getting knocked down and poisoned. And then you'll also get Burst of Fumes off to do it. So you're doing three damage with that, and then that's your first attack. So you're then going to do more damage because you knocked them down. If you don't push them away, you're probably going to do even more attacks and more damage afterwards. Yeah. Also, Ground Pound on Veteran Catalyst is... People probably walked it out already, but it is the one reason why a Beakkeeper is limited to cost one or two character plays, because veteran Catalyst being to walk or charge into a melee and go, free ground pound, and free then I'm going to hit you, which is just way too much damage, unfortunately.
Sad. I'm sad.
Yeah, sad that it didn't stay. But it was too much.
That would have been amazing. But yeah, no, I mean, even if you want to just basically hard cast it, so to speak, you know, walk in and just do all that work. You know, three damage to a whole bunch of models, knock down, pushes, and poison, last activation. Seems okay. Yeah.
Perfect setup for next turn.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely. Yeah, and then he goes top of the next turn. I think the only challenge there would be often he doesn't want to be the last one, or he gets picked on before he becomes the last one in a turn, right? Yeah. He doesn't usually activate very last, just for that principle alone. Very nice, very nice. On a side note, the taking away VPs, that was just something you wanted to reduce in the game?
Weirdly, it wasn't something that we set out to do at the start of developing Season 4. It wasn't one of our big aims, but it kind of just seems to happen over the course of the development that we were removing these extra VP abilities. And then when we actually noticed it happening in multiple places, in a lot of different guilds, then we sat down and thought, is this something we're happy in? Is this something that we're okay with? Because it seems to have started happening without us intentionally doing it to start off with. And no, we are. We're happy with it. We've experimented with a lot of different extra ways of generating victory points, but we were finding problems with each of them, and I won't go into the reasons why I removed each of them because we'll have done that on those on review podcasts. Yeah. But certainly for it wasn't the same reason for every single one of them. I think that's what I'll say in summary. And for the purpose of Veteran Catalyst, at least it was because it was contributing to that absolutely binary activation of it was absolutely amazing or it does absolutely nothing for you. And we were unhappy at that, but yeah. So it is something that we did, but it isn't something that we set out to do from the beginning. And each one of those individual changes has their own reason.
Fair. It makes me a little bit sad, but I completely get it. Shall we move on to Mr. Fireballs himself? Mercury, very nice. I do like the changes here. And this is probably where the start of the conundrum of trying to pick players, you know, who you want in, who you want out, because he's one of those ones I find, just looking at the list, he's on the cusp. So his tackle became momentous. We've kind of already talked about his character plays, but we'll go into that a little bit more. He can trigger him off the playbook, which is sensational. He got the tack buff. Tack 4-5 is actually pretty big maths-wise, as we've discussed earlier, in terms of punching a 4-1 model. So that's pretty important. Most of the other stuff, I think his momentous damage he lost, which I'm assuming is you encouraging him to just punch people to get the momentous fire and then just throwing it in people's faces, which I approve of. You know, is there anything there that I've kind of missed in terms of, you know, your intent and what you wanted to achieve with him?
No, I think you've got it there, really. I think one of the interesting choices we made with Mercury is we elected for him not to be one of the models that got one of the efficiency traits, which was to remove a condition and get something free. He didn't get one of those, and the main reason for that is we just thought he brings enough other bits and pieces that are useful to the table for him not to need that. So momentous tackle on one, very, very handy, especially for a team that's playing with the ball quite a lot. A four die kick is not something that's particularly common in the Alchemists, and the fact that he's actually doing a consistent level of ranged damage that he can repeat. So where you've got Noxious Blast on Calculus, that's something that she can only do once. Fireball is something that it's not once per turn. So he can walk into a model and just do Fireball repeatedly and either use that 2 damage and burning on the model that he's attacked him with the dice at, or you can do the character play on another model and hit them automatically. And because he's got that consistent level of range damage, we didn't feel that it was necessary for him to have that extra efficiency, because every time you roll Fireball, that's effectively a cost of character play. It only has the cost of the GB, so you can only trigger it from your playbook, but it is probably worth about 2 influence. So every time you trigger it from the playbook, you're kind of getting an extra influence's worth of efficiency from him already. Does that make some sense? So he didn't feel he needed something like Reactive Solution on top of that.
No, because free Fireball, Fire Blast on top of 4 Fireballs seems a little bit too good.
Yeah, that's a lot of damage.
Yeah, you can still do that with Beaker Keeper. Like that's the one, I guess, caveat with him, is that if you Beaker Keeper him, he had this relationship with Flask back in the early seasons. You do have to do those four fireballs and fire blast for a ton of damage.
Yep.
So you've done that to someone and like made them sir?
I didn't hit all the fireballs, but I tried.
Well, I can't help you there. It's my dice rolling. It's probably, yeah, proved. Another thing I noted, and I think we forgot to mention it on Calculus, but so on the back of the card, Burning Spirit for Mercury, and I believe that's called something like Poisonous Fumes on Calculus, the aura, the size of that's increased.
Yes.
Yeah, so reason being in terms of them being engaged by a 2-inch melee model, I'm assuming?
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's just when we're looking at the guild overall. That's a fair thing to note out. What I'm just trying to get around to is saying that that's not like the first reason for us doing it. It was mainly just when we had our initial look over the alchemists, we were looking for small changes that we could make to help them improve or make their condition game more prominent. And this is one of the small things that we could do to assist with that. So it is useful in a number of different situations for a number of different reasons. But the main reason for us doing it was mainly just to push that condition game even further.
And it's pretty handy. If I'm correct in the way the rule works, if a 1-inch melee model's coming into you, they hit the burning, they automatically take the burning condition when they enter. Therefore, if they don't have the extra 2 inches of range, they stop. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. So there are a number of models that could actually have a problem engaging Mercury if they don't have enough movement to do so, and a 1-inch melee zone, as you point out.
Yeah, I approve of this.
Yeah, way to solve non-interactive playstyle.
Thanks. Hey, I said reduce, not eliminate.
The salt mine is open.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. And got rid of what was the ability on tactical advice, something like that, on with the flask. That was just obviously with Beaker Keeper, he kind of gets that anyway, right?
Yeah, tactical advice is one of the abilities that we've reduced in previous editions of the game, and we've just saw fit to just remove it from the game completely now because it was one of the abilities that we could trim. It wasn't serving enough of a purpose to justify its existence, which sounds really, really dark, but it's true. It wasn't doing enough, basically.
Yeah. Sorry, I've got nothing there.
Unfortunately, it didn't have sellotape on, so it exploded.
Right.
You know, in like back when you actually bought audio CDs and they'd have that hidden track at the end, I think Double Dodge might start having like hidden tracks at the end of episodes. I'm not sure. Maybe. Just maybe. So Mercury, throwing fire in people's faces. I love it. So, Giblin, you had a few games, like just burning people alive, or?
Yeah, so Fireball Lash wasn't added in until quite late, I believe. That's right, Perkins, because he didn't have this interactivity with conditions. I found myself finding it difficult to put him into my teams because I was getting more value with other people. Yeah. So there needed to be a hook to take Mercury into your six. And as soon as Fireball was added, I actually found that being quite a useful character play so that I could actually get the takeout and maybe play that 2-2 style.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you take Crucible, you have your sort of your pie plate placer, and then Mercury got left aside a lot. But
where he's valuable, I think that definitely brings him into the mix, doesn't it?
Yeah. If you were to look at him without Fireball on his card, he really has to be in a niche to get into the six. But with Fireball on the card, he starts to really compete again.
Yeah, I see him as what you used to be able to do with Hoist and Sucker Punch. It's that kind of like being able to just rip, like punch one model, you know, you hostage them, and then you just start throwing damage at other models plus the condition. That's pretty
good. Yeah.
So on to... I'm going to label as definitely my favourite change of the guild here. This is a model that I've always loved, this model. And I've played him quite a bit, actually, much to the dismay of certain podcasts who think he's trash. He is trash. He's so much better than that now, though. Mr. Venom. Once again, did he fall into that that crucible kind of didn't see enough play, or just wanted a bit of a rework because he missed the mark of what his intended play style was?
Do you want to go first, Gibbley?
Yeah. So I was gonna say towards the end of season three, I actually saw a bit of a resurgence for Venin. When people started playing a bit more goal orientated, and less of that standoffish play with the 2-8 kick that has now changed. You could take, say, Mist, Vitriol, him, Midas, and you suddenly have four models with an 8-inch kick. Your threat of the ball was pretty solid. However, he was sort of like Crucible, not your primary pick for your six. But now I think he's definitely, well, he's in my six. I love this profile.
I just don't see how you don't pick this guy. He just looks amazing. I wouldn't say he's an auto pick, but there's a lot of cool things about him. So playbook changed quite a bit. You got rid of my favorite tackle dodge, but that's fine. I can handle that with all the other things you got. Got rid of the melting body. That became a trait. Is that right? Essentially.
That is right.
Yep. And then he had this kind of, you know, wanting to go in, be a bit of a bomb, you know, idea. And I love how you've brought that in with the character player Acid Rain. Rain basically can pulse off and put some poison on people, triggered off the playbook momentously on the three column, which is achievable.
It's very achievable when you start to look at the back of his card and see how it all syncs up.
I love the visual of Venin charging in and just singing to himself some version of Purple Rain, except Acid Rain, whilst doing the flash dance.
Splashing out poison everywhere.
I love this. I've just got an idea for the title of this podcast, the graphics. Fantastic, thank you. Perkins, I might just raid your Facebook profile photos.
I'm scared.
Never. I've done it enough now. Yeah, so on the back, he's basically got he gains two tack when he's attacking a model that already has the poison condition. So coupled with most of the other models in the guild, fantastic. If he's already procced the Acid Rain, even better. Given that he's got Venomous Strike, he can even miss and hit the one column and put the poison on him and then start hitting at frickin' tack 7. That's pretty good.
Yep.
So, Giblin, you found him like running into the middle and just punching the shit out of people?
Basically, yeah. Long and short of it, he was a great first activation. So, you know, tack 5, charge in, hopefully hit the Acid Rain, if not the 1 damage, as you said. Set up for that tack 7, go in. After that tack 7, you really want to be hitting that Acid Rain, hit a bunch of people, and then his heroic, rather than doing the bleed condition, just suffering 3 condition damage, again, playing into that really sort of aggressive condition play.
Yeah, the old Venom bomb is still alive and well. You can, so because the melting body is a character trait, he procs it, you go in. A lot of the things you want to trigger, from what I can see off the playbook, are momentous. So essentially, you can do that. And then at the end of his activation, you can choose whether you want to strip it off or whether he wants to be that 4-2 stat line, which is pretty good defensively.
Exactly. So, and it, go on, Pegas.
I was going to say, one of the things I find interesting about Venin is this is a type of player that we only realized that we needed in the game probably during this year. It's been calling it a Vanguard model, but you can call it whatever you want to call it, like an initiator or something like that. It's a model that, as a team that wants to engage with the opponent. Yeah, so it's a model that, as a team that wants to engage the enemy team, someone has to go in first, right? And usually that model that goes in first either has to do something like knock down a heck of a lot of enemy models so that they struggle to deal with them, or just be very difficult to deal with. Gast is another perfect example of like a Vanguard model, or Veteran Minx is another good example where they can go in, generate some momentum, have an impact on the enemy team, be there as a crowding out source for the enemy team, the rest of the team that's following up, hopefully even set something up with like knockdowns or singled outs, that kind of thing. But they're going in first, they're going to be a problem, and they're difficult to remove in one activation. And even though Venin has quite a low number of health, it's 13 boxes, because of Melting Body, he's probably going to be going in at defense 4 and armor 2, which is an incredible defensive stat. And even though he can be taken out because he doesn't have the highest number of boxes in the world, it's going to be very difficult for the opponent to do that in one go. So he's a perfect model to go in first activation, generate use of momentum, get those conditions, that condition play started on the enemy team, and survive.
Yeah, no, fair. Did you consider giving him a 2-inch melee and a double dodge on one?
No. No. We definitely know there are certain breaking points in the game, and that would be one of them.
Yeah. One or the other as well. Like, I'd take either. Nah, he does seem fantastic. I do love that you've kept that bomb nature of him. I found that it was always a fun thing if you could trigger that at the end of a turn. Was kind of cool. But also, yeah, at the start of the turn, really just completely mess with him. So I love it.
He's the James Long special. I think all of James's hard work has been rewarded.
Yeah, definitely. And it's James who I talked about having those four players with the 8-inch kick at the end of season 3, or towards the middle of season 3. We talked a lot about that. And a shout out to James, who is this goes out on the Friday, right? He's getting married tomorrow.
Oh,
Thursday,
congratulations.
I think.
Thursday.
He's
getting married on Saturday, so congratulations, James.
Ah, oh, fantastic. I love that guy. I've met him for the first time at W2C.
He sat on my lap.
Zac Efron-esque.
That might explain why I watched The Showman about 5 times on the plane home.
Continue, please.
No, I do love it. I am slightly sad that he took away the 8-inch kick. I did love the old tackle dodge, sneaky little goal runs. But given, obviously, all the other goal-scoring kind of models that you got in the Alchemist, one, they didn't need it, and two, that wasn't his intended purpose. I actually love the scrumming nature he's got going on.
Yeah, we just redefined Venin as one of the – as even though this is generally a goal-scoring team, he's one of the models that can fight a little bit and get you one of those 2 or maybe even 4 takeouts that you're going to get every now and then. And his 8-inch kick is still in the team. It just got transferred from Venin to Crucible, who is someone that we decided was going to be more of a goal-scoring-focused model. It gave Venin a bit more of a takeout or scrum focus.
Yeah, fantastic. So on to the last model. Everyone's favorite redhead. Vitriol. So thoughts here. She was, I mean, you know, she's had a few kind of iterations, hasn't she? So in terms of, you know, what's been happening with her playbook, the momentum on it, the way clone kind of interacts, that sort of thing. First big thing I noticed was the mom tackle on the one. You just didn't give a fuck anymore, Perkins, and just wanted to put momentum on one, or?
Basically. One of the core rules changes we made was to allow kicking teams to have a momentum point to start the game with. So even though in the older editions of the game, we were a little bit wary of very aggressive kickers that have momentous tackles because it was very easy for them to go in and score a goal straight away. We're less worried about that now. I mean, basically, anybody that can move very quickly effectively has a momentous tackle because of having starting the game with a momentum point. So just having a momentous tackle in your playbook is actually less impactful than it used to be. And because of other changes we've made to Vitriol, she's very, very good at doing an aggressive kickoff and getting the ball and scoring straight away and being difficult to deal with. But she's not impossible to deal with anymore, and mainly because of the change we made to clone, really. She still has an exceptionally good counterattack for a model with a 2-inch melee zone, which is a momentous push touch on 2, which is just fantastic. It's great for getting into space to score goals, and it's great as a counterattack result as well. But clone... The combination with old clone, where she was able to absorb an attack, make a 2-inch dodge, and then make her counterattack on top of that and have access to that push dodge on 2, just made her really, really difficult to pin down. So that's why we changed clone to no longer have that inbuilt dodge now. So she can still ignore an attack and make a counterattack and make a really good counterattack with her push dodge, but she's not impossible to chase down anymore after she scored that goal. So... In a nutshell, we're happier with people scoring using aggressive kickoff to score early goals. But generally, what's going to hopefully happen in season 4 is when people are doing that, that should mean the team that conceded the goal should have an easier time dealing with and hopefully taking out the model that scored the goal. So basically, everyone's scoring points and everyone's having a bit more fun because they're getting to score points and interact with the game.
Yeah. It does sound like you just doubled down on goal scoring there because you've already got a momentum and then you get the momentum to tackle as well. I mean, I love this. That's the part of the game I love. So, no, fair. So, clone got the change. Smoke bomb no more, I believe. And you've played around with I've been burnt before. So, as part of her, obviously she's had a few different kind of iterations in terms of speed and whatnot. The I've been burnt before was the 2-inch dodge stripping and condition. Now, basically, it's a free charge, essentially. And that's also reflected in her influence stat going down to a 2-3, not a 2-4. What were the thoughts on changing that to, you know, from what it was basically, from that dodge to the charge?
Because we knew we were adding veteran calculus. We've got veteran calculus in the team now as well as a striker, and you've got Crucible, who is also capable of going in, stripping the ball, scoring goals. She's got an 8-inch move, acrobatics, and an 8-inch kick. And Midas himself as well, and even Smoke can be a very good goal scorer. So we've got to get, when there is a team that has multiple different goal scorers, we've got to give them each a slightly different purpose or role. For Vitriol, she's actually got probably the shortest threat range of the lot, because you've got veteran calculus who has the 4-inch dodge from extraction. And then you've got Crucible, who has the acrobatics as well, that she can just have as a viable dodge. Vitriol doesn't have any of those things. She just has a very solid move stats. But so she's, even though she's got a very long threat range of about 19 inches without making melee attacks, I think it's 19 inches. It might be less than that. I think it might be 17, actually. That she's probably one of the more resilient goal scorers. And the fact that she's got clone, she's probably got the best counterattack of all of those squaddies, at least. I don't know if about the entire team. She certainly was, because she's got a 2-inch melee zone, it can be very difficult for 1-inch melee zones to get into her. And again, I probably already mentioned it, but the combination of all that with clone, she can be very difficult to deal with, very resilient. She gets stuck. She can go into a team, strip the ball, score a goal, put clone up, dodge back a little bit, and then she actually got a chance of surviving, especially if she dodges like into cover, for instance, as well. It makes it even more difficult to deal with. So she's probably closer to a Linear Mitchell velocity style striker, where she doesn't have the longest threat range in the world, but once she gets into position to score snapshots, or she can just generally be a pain to remove from the pitch.
Yeah.
Which gives her a slightly different flavor of striker to the other ones that are available to the Alchemists.
Yeah, I mean, if you talk to Giblin, he just had them all in his lineup. That's pretty much what I wrote down before. You had all of them, didn't you?
Crucible,
Cactus, and Vitriol, just in Smoke for fun.
Yes, yeah. Goals are plenty, with takeouts available as well. Venom being the sort of like the centerpiece for the guild, being able to put poison on him means that even if you can't apply any to the opposing team, you've got one there, so you can run him up to creep poison onto himself. And then Vitriol can strip it to make her charge and have a bunch of extra swings to try and get that tackle, or if, mm-hmm. you know, your dice aren't being nice, or to put clone up and then charge in.
Yeah,
and one for the shot. There's a lot that can be done with the guild now, and your team choice is so, I say difficult, but it's difficult in the best way possible, in that you have such a breadth of choice.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. And as part of that, I've been burned before, her heroic Face of Fear has, or she's been given a heroic Face of Fear, has the pulse that basically straight up just puts the burning out there. Kind of all right, really, to set up your free charge and or just once you've done it, you know, once you've gone in, hey, have some burning and I'm going to back off.
Yeah, exactly. Again, it frees up your activation order a little bit, because if you've got that point of momentum, you could Face Your Fear, use the push dodge to disengage, take their burning condition to then go charge off into someone else that you might not have seen on the table potentially, with you only putting one influence on her.
Yeah, no, that's pretty impressive. Did you find you'd go early with her in a turn or a bit later? Or
No, I found I was holding her back to be that sort of, you know, you put one on her, but they still can't write her off, because if you just move over with the condition there, it becomes a genuine goal threat again.
Mm. Yeah, and I guess from a, I wouldn't say squishy, I mean, we've just gone through all her defensive stats, but, you know, with 11 health boxes, so she's gone up by one since the last iteration. She's, you know, reasonably kind of squishy in some respects, if you can knock her down, so that definitely helps.
Yeah.
Very nice. I'm excited. I am basically going to be jumping back on Alchemists, because that's where my home is. Welcome back. Well, you know, I just played a bit of engineering. See, the backstory is my dad's an engineer, but I was never smart enough to get into engineering, so it's just my like pseudo way of becoming an engineer was playing them.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, fair. So as a whole, how do you think you guys went with, and this is probably mainly at Perkins, like how do you think you went with solving the Alchemist challenge?
Pretty shit, really.
Brilliant.
No, the Alchemists of the Guild that we're probably proudest of. We've put a heck of a lot of work into them, and in terms of like the type of changes that we've made, we think that we've given them a unique playstyle where they didn't really have one before. They've been around since the beginning of the game in Season 1. They're one of the original 8 guilds, and for the longest time, they probably didn't have their own defined playstyle that we were happy with or that people really enjoyed using or enjoyed playing against. We didn't really hit all of those things together, and we feel like for the first time that we've gotten really close, or hopefully we have hit all those things at the same time, that hopefully they should be fun to play with. Really interesting to play with. They've got their own unique playstyle now where they're using conditions as a resource to be able to get more efficiency and do more cool stuff with. Hopefully they're going to be more fun to play against, because as an opponent of the Alchemist, they're going to be looking to engage you at close range, which means you have targets to attack. Even if you are going to be, your players are going to be melting with burning and poison most of the time, at least you'll have things to hit, generate momentum and play a game there. And yeah, they're probably going to win the, I guess there'd be award for, you know, for lack of a better phrase, for most improved, I guess, in terms of their design, hopefully, is we've taken a guild that is not incredibly popular in the history of Guild Ball, and hopefully made them to be one of the fan favorites.
Nice. So coach's award goes to the Alchemists. I like this. We used to have an award we used to give at the soccer club, and it was called the Wing Defense Bib. It was basically for the one that most improved, but you still don't have really a spot for them. You just give them the Wing Defense Bib because no one really knows who fucking plays Wing Defense in netball.
Fair enough.
Nice. Wasn't a classic anecdote, was it?
I'm going to throw in a cricket chirping effect there.
So on the whole, you guys have basically, from an external point of view, it appears that you're trying to speed the game up and kind of get it going a bit faster, push it maybe slightly back towards the goal scoring a little bit more. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, not necessarily more towards the goal scoring, we've always tried to achieve a balance between the two. It's always going to be difficult, and we're always going to probably be slightly one side more than the other, but we'd always want the goal scoring game to have to be just as fun and just as powerful as the takeout game. And hopefully that you'll have a number of different ways of winning the game. And we're kind of just trying to tell you that you can play it however you want to play it. That's not necessarily true of every single guild. Like, if you're going to play Sharkfish, I mean, you're probably going to score 3 goals more often than not. But most teams, you can go in and go, I love the style of this team, and I get that it is mostly about scoring goals. So that's fine, but I can see they have some potential for takeouts, and that's the part that interests me more. So I'm going to play even more of the takeout focus models, or someone else can come into Alchemist and go, this condition game really excites me, so I'm going to play all these condition dealing models, play smoke, and play around with this removal of condition mechanic, or I'm going to go and play and try and score as many goals as possible. And you can pick up this team and play it in multiple different ways. And hopefully we've given you the options to do that. And one of the things that is kind of the highest tenet to me, at least, of being a game developer is that if we can make, in terms of guild selection to play with and player selection to play with, if we can make as many of your choices as possible, personal preference, you're not coming to the table to go, I'm going to play this model because it is just straight better than this model. If you're coming to the table and going, I'm going to play with this model because it's the one that interests me the most, or I like the model the most, or I like its backstory the most, and you can play with that model and have just as much a chance as winning as any other model that you could have picked instead, then we are in absolutely golden territory. And that's what we're shooting for. I mean, it's a perfect state, so you'll never get there completely, but if we can make as many choices as possible, that personal preference choice, then we're in golden country, basically.
Nice. I mean, you'll never get there if you have that attitude of thinking that you'll never get there, though, you know.
I mean, you got to aim for perfection to hope to get anywhere close to it, I guess.
Yeah, fair. Giblin, interesting question. Do they play like you did you find you went for the 2-2, the 3-0, just from a player experience point of view?
So the majority of my playtest games were against Steve Margotson, and he was fine-tuning Brewers at the time. So a lot of mine were 3-3, purely because the Brewers are so resilient. 3-3? 3-0. Purely because the Brewers are just so resilient. A lot of the time, it came down to Nausea scoring my final goal because my players were so beat up.
Nice. I can't go 3-3, you know, if you take out the mascot 3 times.
Yes. Cool.
Yeah. The maths is there. We'll go with that.
Yeah, no, most of my games were 3-0 with takeouts potentially on the table, but that goal just to round it out was the better option in most times.
Yeah,
there's definitely something to be said for threatening both. Like, if you can, with the Alchemist now, because of that condition game, you can still play a heavy goal scoring style, but have one or two models on the table that are capable of beating people up. Like Venom, he's got a 3-6 kick stat, so he can assist with moving the ball around a little bit, but he's there to achieve a takeout if one sort of becomes opportunistically available to you. And then if your opponent is in a state where they're worried about, oh, you might get a takeout here, but if I make this takeout safe, you knew I might go score a goal over here. There's definitely something to be said for just applying pressure in both ways. And then taking whatever opportunity comes your way, really.
Yeah, exactly. You ask so many questions that they can't answer them all. Smoke is fantastic for just making their whole team drop down to dangerous levels, along with Venin's heroic. The two, the legendary and the heroic, in a turn, pretty much half most of the players' health, and then they're suddenly like, "Oh, you might just wipe me out here." When you can actually just be threatening the ball, there's lots of fun to have.
Yeah, no, fantastic.
With Smoke, you often find a situation as well where when people first saw Smoke on the blog, they were talking about, oh, she can just do 12 damage. Why would you want to do just 12 damage in one go unless it was to win you the game? Or some people going, oh, the 12 damage on one model is just too much. That's probably not even that common a situation. It'll happen sometimes, but no. What you might find is there's just so many models that are on between like 4 and 6 health by the time that Smoke activates that she's actually just going to go, you know what, I'm going to score a goal, but on the way, I'm just going to go poke, poke both of you dead and then score a goal.
Infuse, score a goal. Yeah.
Or just punch him with a tech 5 and now actually getting a result. I love it.
Yeah.
Do you feel that there's an opportunity for an additional condition within the Alchemist's Guild? I'm thinking something like Cold Sore and then a character trait called Zavirax. Just to deal with.
Sure, why not? But in all seriousness, we did consider whether we wanted them to have their own condition. We decided against it in the end, but it was actually genuinely something we thought about. I don't think we actually opted for that for the exact plan you're specifying.
Nah.
But we did think
they
about
opted
it.
For it because there's only 6 conditions and there's only 6 sides on a dice. Conspiracy.
Oh, he's seen through. This is a beyond the looking glass.
This is an outrage. This is a conspiracy against colonials, and I will not stand for it.
It's fine. I'm sitting down. So.
I did also think that maybe instead of ground pound, you know, you talk about Cat popping ground pound and walking away. Maybe you could have called that play Brexit.
Oh, too soon. Too soon. And so real. It hurts so much.
Because that's what we'll be calling it when we use it.
I'm just going to take the non-momentous Brexit.
That is perfect. Non-momentous Brexit.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, but that's, I think we can all agree that Andrew Jones is a member of the Illuminati and he must be stopped. He knows what
this is going dark places. I don't know if I can agree too much to this anymore. Yeah. This is what has happened.
I can't even talk anymore.
You know, I figured that given we were spending roughly 2 hours prosecuting your agenda, we might get maybe 3 minutes prosecuting our own. Sorry to subvert this exercise in marketing.
On that note, do we actually stick a fork in it and say goodbye to Stockport's Fast Talk Champion? Did you win it this year, 2018, can I say?
I mean, listening back to some of the recordings I've made with some of the other outlets, and I definitely seem to speak faster when recorded because I don't speak that fast in normal conversation.
Yeah, sure. We speed it up. Yeah, it's a bit of a disco thing. We like to play it on Friday nights with a nice little backbeat. So we'll say thank you to you and the sexiest eyes and kill ball, Mr. Giblin. I am currently wearing you at the moment. Yeah. You could say.
What the fuck? Like a mask?
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. No, we swapped WTC shirts. So I just feel like I was in a warm place of that, you know, this evening. So.
Well, that's lovely. You two did seem to have a bit of a bromance going on.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I've got the stubby holder on my desk now with a can of Diet Coke in, so.
Brilliant, brilliant. I love this. I did see that post the other day.
So is the name of this episode just going to be something like Tales from the Alchemist from Inside Each Other or something like that?
Hey, we can. I did think, you know, you photoshopped onto, I don't know, Prince with maybe some kind of Top Gun background and Great Balls of Fire. apparently Bryce's balls, I think, at some point, but I don't know.
He is ginger.
Yeah, it becomes an equation of how much I can be bothered photoshopping, basically.
I think we should call it Perkins Persistent Oral Herpes.
I got nothing. Thanks.
Can I let that bit go out, or do I have to edit that as well for the? Because you do have some sensitive listeners. It's all right. I'll keep it in the outtakes.
Yeah. Or you could just take all of the stuff that's not appropriate and just go not appropriate outtakes. Extra clip. Download this bit.
Yeah. Sure.
We'll make it work. We'll make it work.
Adult content advised, whatever.
Yeah, and we get more downloads for that than the actual.
I bet you would.
Yeah, no, absolutely. About the rest.
Yeah. Fair. But it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for giving up some time. Sorry about the jumping around. Not that anyone who's listening to this knows, but, you know, logistically working out two different time zones. Yeah. It's been a pleasure.
Well, thank you guys for having us.
Yeah, it's been great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and good luck with season 4.
Oh, you actually put a nice spin at the end there, Dave. Welcome back, and I might need a refresher towel or something. It's like we're about to come into landing after a really long flight that was fantastic. I got to watch all my favorite movies. How about you, Dave?
Basically, Campbell, I feel that was a whole that whole experience was like an exploding gerbil, and nobody had enough sticky tape to cover it.
Exactly, because we all know what that's there for. Fantastic. Look, I think it's fantastic that season 4 is upon us, or within a couple of days of this launch. And to be fair, I'm just over season 3. It's old news. It's boring. I'm done with it. I want momentum on kickoff. I want it now.
Dead, buried, finished.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's always good to have new toys, right?
Yeah.
This has been a fun exercise, Campbell. I'm glad we've done it. I'm glad that the embargoes, the media embargoes, have been strictly adhered to by everybody in the Guild Ball community. It's not been a shit show in any respect.
No. No people aren't going outside the boundaries at all. No. Absolutely.
And we praise the entire community for observing the spirit of the embargo.
Fantastic.
Huzzah, huzzah, friends!
But with this, with the end of this episode, obviously the cards will be posted with this so you can read along. That's it. You will have all the information you need to basically go and have a few games, barring a few rules, adaptations and changes to the season 4 kit. But we know, you know, most of those, we understand how the range modifier on kicking is going to work and the momentum on kickoff. So go out there, start playing.
That's it. That's it. Go home, everybody. Go play with your toys. We're done.
Yeah. Nothing to see here.
No. Oh, hey, there might be something new to see though. Campbell, have you been working on a project?
Ooh, I have. I have indeed. As part of our Patreon and giving back to the community, we have some Double Dodge dice, David. Some fantastically sexy looking Double Dodge dice, which we'll put up for sale. We'll post as part of this. I think, Dave, you've put it out on the Twitter. If you want some, give us a yell. We're going to sell them in sets of 10. You can buy 20, but that's just two 10s. And we're yet to work out a price, but they'll be comparable with buying, you know, a standard set of 10 dice from any, you know, outlet. And, yeah, so hit us up on Twitter or, you know, private message us on Facebook, and we will sort you out with the sexy dice.
And are you likely to put a link up on our website as well?
Definitely put a link. And we might even, after some discussion, give some bonuses to people of $5 or more Patreon subscribers, which not only get the widget, but some dice might be involved in that. Yeah, because they're awesome. They roll really well. They don't miss four dice tap-in snapshots.
Boo.
Factually accurate.
Anybody you wanted to say hello to while we're here?
I'll probably do a thank you first to Perkins and Giblin. Really awesome that they could spend some time, especially given Perkins has been running around all the media outlets helping out. It's, you know, great for them. Obviously, this is a tool, you know, in terms of media and marketing for them, but we love having those guys on. So, yeah, massive shout-out to those blokes. Have you got anyone you want to say hi to?
I just wanted to say congratulations to James Long again. I'm not surprised somebody locked that down. My God.
That's fair. That's fair. He's one sexy number.
Big shout out to everybody we saw at WTC. Gubbs does not portray the excellence of the Guildball community. And everybody we met and drank with and talked with at WTC just could not speak more highly of.
Absolutely. From your Jason Mountains, your Andrew, you know, Martin Koch, Timmy, all the Germans. It was fantastic. I'm not going to sit here and name them all, but we had a great time, and all the Aussies that obviously we dragged over there as well. It was, yeah, it's the glory of Guild Ball, honestly. It's one of the best events I've ever been to, so it was awesome.
Yeah. So that's it.
Season 4. Launched. Do we need a rocket launching about now?
No, I think we need Great Balls of Fire or something. Maybe we need to feel the need for speed. I'm not sure.
Okay, or a middle-aged man just straining to get it up, you know, some kind of like erecting a flag or something. I don't know.
Like it was Iwo Jima. What?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I don't know where that was going. Fair.
All right.
Why would you sell the tape a gerbil so it doesn't explode when you shit?